All right, so let's kick this off. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome two amazing people that need absolutely no introduction. They've done an incredible amount of work for their communities, and they have had a lasting impact on a lot of us. So join me in welcoming Chris Nwamba. He's a senior cloud advocate at Microsoft. And Chris Coyer, who is the founder of CSS Tricks and CodePen.
I'm going to do the same move. Double thumbs.
All right. Interesting fact about Chris. He once won a hot dog eating competition only through his charm. An interesting fact about Chris, he's now DJing his way into writing code. And I won't be saying which Chris is which Chris. So you're going to have to figure that out into the live chat on YouTube. Let us know. And I also encourage all of you to give them a really warm welcome. We cannot hear your applauses, but we can see your excitement on YouTube, in the chat, on Twitter. So please make sure to make your presence felt there. Thank you so much for joining both of you. And over to you.
Thank you so much, Simona, for that introduction. That's really nice of you. Hi, everyone. Welcome once more to this event. We've put a lot of effort to make for you, and we hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy making this event for you. Today, I have someone special with me who I feel like I'm not exaggerating when I say a lot of us already know him, but like I feel we should still do him, like give him the opportunity to tell us more about himself. So, Chris.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's nice to have you here too, because I feel like I look at you like, oh my God, this guy knows what he's doing, you know? And then they got me over here, and all I have is that I'm old, you know? I've just been around a while. That's cool. But yeah, I wore my CodePen shirt because I feel like it's my responsibility, you know? I'm a co-founder of CodePen, which is like a front-end playground. So you're not exactly practicing your serverless skills there yet. But I can tell you that as the co-founder of it, we use serverless a ton in the creation and running of CodePen, and it's just been nothing but awesome for us. So we're kind of a living example of embracing that and having it work out wonderful for us. And then I write CSS tricks as well, which is funny, because it's, if you've never heard of it, it's, you know, we talk about CSS, but we talk about lots of things, kind of building websites as well.
I do have an article on serverless on CSS tricks, so I don't think it's just CSS. We do a lot of like stuff on CSS tricks.
We branch out a bunch.
Should we get started with our favorite thing about serverless? I feel like that's like it, serverless is everywhere these days, so I feel like we should start with sharing like
our
what's the one thing really
thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like that. I like that you do that, because it's like, I don't know, I want to know what yours is. Like, if you think of the world server, which is big, it's a big thing. What's your favorite thing?
Yeah, so I think my favorite thing is coming from the fact that I'm a front end developer, the fact that it helps me become more productive when it comes to adding an API. I'm short skilled when it comes to building backend apps. Like I can't do anything when it comes to that. I don't know what to do about the best architecture and how to scale and stuff like that. So serverless kind of comes with that best modern microservice architecture. It just brings that to you, and then you can start like doing it, like layering everything on top of it. That's my favorite part of it.
Well, I like that. That's big, and we share that. So I bet there's a lot of people listening that do have some backend stuff, that are here to learn about how serverless can alleviate some of their backend struggles as well. And serverless is there for you. I believe you. But I'm a front end developer too. That's all I ever am. I never really developed a lot of backend skill set. Although, you know, just from being around the web and in the code bases, I play with Ruby, and my WordPress shops have me in PHP land and stuff. But I don't self-identify that way. My strength is not backend development. It's front end development. But when you think of serverless, to me, I know it supports all kinds of languages and stuff, but a big one is Node. you know, a lot of the serverless stuff you can do with no JavaScript. And it means that my JavaScript skills extend nicely into the world of serverless. And it makes me feel powerful. It makes me feel like I can do stuff that I never have been able to do before. And I love that. And that's just me personally. But as a person who runs a company, too, that has kind of a front end heavy amount of people that are working for me, like at CodePen, it means all of us can do that. It means all of us can reach in and start being effective in this world of serverless. And the impact of that is incredible. You know, it's turned us into more full stack devs. You know?
Yeah, and that's very powerful. Speaking of the fact that you have a lot of front end developers are working for you, one thing that is really exciting is that in as much as like previously, we were able to, serverless was able to solve the problem of how do we handle this business logic. One thing it didn't take care of back then was how do we store the data that comes from this business logic. And at this point, there's this thing now called serverless databases, which we're going to also talk about today, which like basically behaves the way serverless behaves, like pay-as-you-use kind of model. And developers can start using it. It's plug and play, just like serverless, and it's very easy to get started with, which is super exciting. And we're happy to share those things with you today.
Yeah, that's great.
cool. Let's talk about your favorite thing, Chris. Let's talk about Jamstack. I know, I know, like you've been waiting for this session to share a lot about like how serverless.
Yeah, maybe. Well, because I know this is, you know, Jamstack is like a loaded term, just like serverless is. But I'm glad they both exist because they're like this. They're so, they're together. They're the same in a way. I mean, not quite. I feel like Jamstack, in a way, even though it's loaded, it's also, I hate to say this, but it's a little bit meaningless, right? It's a little bit just like, I don't know, just have static files in a static place. And then everything else you need to do, you're going to need to do that essentially with client-side JavaScript. So that M at the end of Jamstack is markup, and it just means, I don't know, make sure you find good hosting for that. Like what's Azure's thing? Static...
Azure Static Web Apps,
which is that's Jamstack. If you put an index.html file there, that's Jamstack. But you could do a lot with that index.html file because you know that you can use JavaScript on the client side to do anything. And sometimes that JavaScript on the client side, guess what? It talks to APIs. And those A's, they don't have to be serverless, but that's why I do this, because they so often are, aren't they? Like, it's so rare to make a Jamstack site and then talk to some monolith somewhere or whatever. Chances are you're talking to a little baby serverless function that's pay as you use, that's really cheap, it's really secure, it's written in a way and deployed in a way that front-end developers can participate. So this Jamstack stuff, it's very lovable for that reason. The dev experience of Jamstack is really prioritized and great. I mean, you like it, don't you? You're a fan.
I'm the biggest fan of Jamstack, and the fact that you said it. I think you said like you used something spiritual when you were describing like the relationship between Jamstack and serverless, which makes a lot of sense, because the way Jamstack evolved as this thing that helped developers build something really quickly with not like you don't have to. It's a very accessible type of stack. You don't have to like know all these best practices to be able to build a performance app. So that is where the serverless came in, is that it's also that one thing that to build a backend app, you don't have to be very experienced as a developer to be able to like have some API going on for this awesome front-end app or Jamstack app you've built. And I like how you said that Jamstack. This is a new one now. Like Jamstack kind of is meaningless, which basically, I guess what you're trying to say is it's like when you listen to a very simple dance music, it has a template. It's a 4x4 kind of signature that says, hey, no matter what you do, no matter how creative you want to be, as long as it follows these 4x4 rules, you are going to end up making a very interesting sound pattern, which is the same thing with Jamstack. People can just need to follow a set of best practices, so it doesn't box you, it doesn't limit your creativity. You can build a whole finance system, and you can build something as small as your blog using Jamstack. I'm a big believer. I can do anything with Jamstack.
You can do anything. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's interesting. I like as a little bit of myth busting, I feel like early days of Jamstack, and this is just me and my perception, I felt like because static hosting was at the top of the list of what Jamstack is and does, that it was like, okay, these are for pre-rendered websites. And there's this whole world of SSGs or static site generators, and those plus Jamstack make a ton of sense. They really go together very well. But that is not what Jamstack is limited to. If you think, oh, Jamstack, that's for your Jekyll site or your Hugo site or whatever it is, 11D site, it's not. It can be, and that could be absolutely part of the stack, whatever you determine it to be, but it doesn't need to be. For example, you're a big believer in that anything can be built on Jamstack, and I agree with you. So imagine an e-commerce app that has 100,000 products on it. That's when people point and laugh and say, Jamstack will never do that. And we can point and laugh back and say, it absolutely can. Spiritually, Jamstack is supposed to pre-render stuff. It doesn't prescribe the fact that you have to pre-render everything. So there's no reason a serverless can't be a big part of an e-commerce app. Serverless can say, here's a pre-rendered template for what a product looks like. And then I'm going to hit a serverless function, get some data from a serverless database, have that come back down and use a front-end framework to plop all that stuff into place. Totally still Jamstack. Then people fill their cart. They authenticate with JWTs. They communicate with Stripe APIs to take payment. All this stuff happening in a serverless way. And then you still have this Jamstack site that's still super fast and secure and has all the benefits. I think I even asked you at one time, like, because we don't know this. None of us work at Twitter. Let's say you're going to rewrite a big app, something like Twitter. Which to me is like, no way you're going to pre-render every tweet of all time. Would you still do a Jamstack? And you told me like, you would.
I would definitely do it Jamstack. The good thing about Jamstack is that you can always take it like bits and pieces and like merge them together. Like it's a very progressive type of tool. It doesn't tell you, hey, if you're going to use Jamstack, everything is going to suffer. That's what makes it very beautiful. It's like, okay, I'm going to start with this Jamstack, then I'm just going to use just plain JavaScript to do things like pull down to refresh and stuff like that, and like do all those interactions and still come back to pre-rendering and all this kind of stuff, which is I like how you one thing I wanted us to talk about, which you just like touched right now, is databases. So we databases and storage. Yeah. So we've seen this is the only place where Jamstack leaves you to go wild. It's like, okay, do whatever you want with this. It doesn't give you any rule or like none. Both Jamstack or Trifactor, which both are serverless heavy frameworks, one of them gives you an option for data storage. They're like just do your thing. But then one of the biggest challenges with that is that for storing data, especially with databases, there is this thing when you provision a database, you're charged for two things. You're charged for the storage itself, and then you're also charged for the throughput. So let's say the bandwidth, and that throughput is measured in this thing they call the request per unit. So you can just say like for 5,000 requests per unit, you're charged for this particular amount of fee. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
So now what we generally do is go to Azure and like, hey, I need 5,000 RU per second and then 50 gigabytes of storage. And then you realize I'm just a startup. I don't even have like people who are going to store data here yet.
That's just a guess.
Yep. Exactly. That's just a guess. But then you've spent all this time optimizing front end with Jamstack, API with serverless, then database still becomes like something that came from the 1980s, which is still it's still very monolithic. I don't know what was the best term to use for that. So I was excited to see that a few weeks ago there was this official thing that was launched that is actually called serverless databases. It's mind blowing.
It's huge. Exactly.
It brought exactly what serverless does. It's architected the way like serverless was architected, which basically means that you are not charged for anything on for an existing database. Like nothing is being, you're not incurring any price unless there's an actual throughput, unless someone actually makes a request.
Can I tell you how we use that at CodePen? We have a monolith for our database because it's big and it's expensive. It's one of the most expensive parts of our infrastructure, but that's the production database. It's got to be fast. Mm-hmm. It's got to be big. It's got to be whatever. So it is what it is. But we have a staging environment like so many people do, right? But staging is... Yeah. A tiny, tiny 0.0001% amount of traffic goes to staging. It's just for testing and stuff. So guess which one we have as a serverless database? The staging one, because it's super cheap. So rather than having two instances of this database that are very expensive, mm-hmm. we get the staging one for pennies. You know, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And for everyone watching, if you're wondering what service offers this, it's called Cosmos DB Serverless Database. It's new, it's shiny, it's exciting. I want you all to try it out if you're using serverless. It's going to save you a whole lot of money. Like seriously, like you would stop paying. You would just like you're not paying anything for serverless, you realize you won't be paying much or little to nothing to actually store data that comes from those serverless APIs.
So if we're talking landscape here, so we've talked about static hosting because that's part of Jamstack. We've talked about serverless functions because they power the things that you need to do that you still need a server for. So again, if you're still like mad about the word serverless, don't worry. There's still servers involved. You can still run server stuff. That's what serverless functions are. We've talked about data storage and even serverless data storage. Very impressive. Okay. So what else is there to cover landscape wise?
Yeah, let's talk about another upcoming architecture, this thing called a three-factor app.
Yeah, tell me what a three-factor app is.
yeah. It's one of my favorite things as well. It's very, very related to how Jamstack is, but it's very related, but they can go together as well. It's not like an opposing architecture. It's like, hey, you can mix and match however you want, which is what I do most of the time.
So here's the triangle. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's a triangle. Yeah. So we have your front end up. I'm trying to step away from my mic. You have your front end up somewhere at the top, and then on the right you have a serverless API, and on the other left you have a GraphQL endpoint.
Okay.
Yep. So
what's the GraphQL doing for you? That's just your CRUD, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this is for people, this is more of a progressive solution for people who are too scared of heavily moving entirely to serverless. So let's assume we have to credit the fact that three-factor app is an architecture that is being pioneered by Asura, which is a GraphQL company, and they did a great job at doing this. And there's actually a talk from Alison and Buck today that's going to show an example on how this works.
So they're a company that will provide that GraphQL API for you, which you use serverlessly. Yeah.
Exactly. So what then happens is that you have this, you have a monolith system that does like CRUD stuff. You create, read, update, delete. It's a very simple API. That's all. Yep. And then you wake up one morning. This is what makes it very progressive. You wake up the next morning and realize that your clients want to start accepting payments, and they're like, okay. What do we have to rewrite for this?
Actually, that's not CRUD. That's a different type of thing.
Exactly. So with three-factor app, you actually have to rewrite literally nothing. All you need to do is to create an entirely different serverless API, and then add a GraphQL mutation that is going to respond to that API, and that's all. So if anyone runs a mutation against that custom mutation that you've written that calls that serverless endpoint, it basically like processes the payment and then returns a response as a GraphQL response, which is pretty amazing. And then the GraphQL endpoint can then just talk to your front end app. Yeah.
Okay. I love that. So you got e-commerce available in there too through the use of, you know, the A and Jamstack and APIs and serverless functions and all that. There may even be auth involved because chances are if you're selling something that you may be logging into that website, and Microsoft has something for that too, don't they?
Yep, of course.
Oh my gosh. The amazing Microsoft has a solution for auth. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so great.
Well,
yeah,
so it looks like we have to wrap up a little bit. So do you want one of them? It'd be interesting to get you to say a little bit of something about serverless and Jamstack in emerging markets, because I think that's a big deal. Could we end with that?
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Okay, let's do that. So this is the thing I'm really excited about when it comes to serverless and what it's doing for emerging markets. I don't have the time to do a demo, but if you just Google Azure Functions Pricing, you are going to see, it's going to take you to a page, and you would start, when I do this demo, what I would first of all start doing is to like check how many requests per month before I start getting charged. I would start, like from doing a demo, I would start with 100 requests per month, and I'm being charged like zero, literally nothing. And then I check 1,000 requests per month, I'm not being charged anything. 10,000 requests per month, I'm not being charged anything. 100,000 requests per month is still free.
Free?
1 million requests per month is, I think, anyone should correct me if I'm wrong, but I think about, it's less than a dollar. Literally less than a dollar for 1 million. Yeah, so if you think about an evolving market, an emerging market, who they want to spend as little as possible to build powerful solutions for their ecosystem and their community, you can see like how this empowers them so much. This becomes like, it gives them both like all the resources they need, as well as the fact not as well as the freedom not to worry about being very, very skilled, because before they can start solving this problem. So imagine, exactly. Imagine like having to, like, you don't have to worry about how do I like architect a full microservice application to be able to do this, and how do I manage like scaling and stuff like that. These are things that serverless comes with out of the box. So all those things, you don't have to think about them. And to even take things a little bit further, there's Power Platform, and people called powerful developers or citizen developers, who we're going to take a look at. We're going to see that the talks about them today. But basically, citizen developers are developers who are not professional developers. They don't know how to write code, but they have an idea and they have a problem they really need to solve, especially for their community. So there's this thing called a Power Platform, as well as a Logic Apps on Azure, which people can basically use and drag. Like you can use a UI to build serverless functions now. I'm not kidding.
Oh, like, really?
Like imagine Figma imagine Figma for or Sketch for
serverless functions.
Exactly, for serverless function. Yes, that's exactly what it is. So, so basically, you can drag you can drag a widget and say, hey, I need to respond to a request from GitHub, and this is my GitHub credentials, and then that happens for you. Yeah, exactly. So
I like the cost stuff. It's not, and then it's cost on both sides. It's cost to create. I mean, a dollar for a million requests, and I know you asterisk that with, you know, please look it up kind of thing. But that's a level playing field. And then to be able to build apps that are less front end heavy and more offloading to cloud stuff too, that's a big deal on both sides. So wonderful.
Yep.
Thanks so much for the chat, Christian. I really appreciate it. It's nice to have somebody make me look
Really am. Yeah, thank you. And thank you everyone for joining us. This has been a very nice chat with you, Chris. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See you again.
So back, over to Simona. Simona, I think you're muted.
This is off to a good start. That had to happen, and I'm happy we got that out of the way immediately. That was so awesome. Thank you so much, both of you, for the incredible session. I love the triangle. I will definitely use that analogy. And I also want to kind of share that the YouTube chat has completely lit. And everyone is engaging and asking questions. It's actually quite hard to keep up with everything that's happening, but I'm loving it so much. A few things that have come up, folks absolutely love CSS Tricks, Chris, and they found it extremely, extremely useful. There's a lot of comments around that. Folks would love to get into Chris and Chris chat on a daily basis every single morning. So you've heard this here, I don't know. Yeah. And then there are other questions around how do we do serverless with PHP or COBOL or any other languages?
Doable. It's doable. And also, if you're a fan of CSS Tricks, there's serverless.css-tricks.com, which kind of gets into the landscape stuff too, just in case anybody hasn't seen it.
Well, I am so glad that you brought that up, Chris. It's actually one of the first links that I've added in these QR codes here, because I found the serverless.cssTricks.com to be one of the most useful resources when it comes to getting a good understanding of what serverless resources are available for us out there. And for all of you other on the stream, if you have other questions and insights and knowledge that you want to share with Chris and Chris, I recommend you join their Dev2 Office Hours page. That's the QR code here at the top, at the right hand side of the screen, and you should scan that QR code using your phone. All you need to do is literally take a picture, and then that will pop a notification for you, and you can open that link immediately, and make sure to ask away all of the questions that you might have for Chris and Chris. Share your knowledge, share your insights. They would love to engage with you there. But really grateful, and another warm round of applause for Chris and Chris. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.